absolutely invalid question, and he will not get an answer. The guy who sends us a copy of the patent disclosure that he's writing, and he wants us to do a review for it, absolutely unqualified, wrong. The guy who sends us his homework assignment from his college electrical engineering course, and he wants us to help him with the homework, absolutely wrong. The guy who sends us a long list of every piece of electronics he owns, and how can I best use this stuff, that's not valid. Mel has volunteered a very small amount of his time to answer what he judges to be a valid question from a person who is enthusiastic, needy, just getting into the hobby, or occasionally a guy who is away from home, but he wants a question answered that particular week, or he's not available for those particular hours of the TechNet, and he wants an answer, and he wants some way of communicating with us. So occasionally we'll take those. But a hell of a lot of the sign-in questions by way of the email system are asking questions that are not what we promised, not what we volunteered to supply, wrong, and to chastise for people to be chastising us for not covering those particular subjects. You can do that if you want to, we're not going to pay attention to it. We have supplied what was originally promised, and now people are asking for something beyond that. Well, we may not volunteer for that. So, now, there is one comment that people have made that is somewhat valid, and that is they do like the mail-in questions, and because we keep pushing the mail-in questions to the end of the program and people don't want to stay up that late, I can sort of understand that one. And I'm now beginning to believe that right after we handle the talk-in questions, those are the high-priority questions, the people who really sign in and verbally discuss the question. And by the way, handling email has got a huge inefficiency for me. I'm a find and text typer system. I can talk 150 words a minute when I get excited, but I probably can only type about 10 or 15 words a minute. On top of that, when a guy gives you a question verbally, and you can ask him, hey, do you mean this or do you mean that in your question, you can find out real fast what he's really asking. Whereas writing back and forth, you may have to send 3 emails back and forth just to find out what the guy is really asking. A hell of a lot of us, when we first answer the question, because it's an unknown piece of information, we haven't formulated the question in our mind yet. And it's not a valid question when first expressed. So verbally, you find that out real fast. And writing is a very inefficient process. So we're going to try to de-emphasize the limited daylight out of the write-in stuff, because 90-some-odd% of it, I think, is not what we volunteer to do. I'm a little hot under the collar on this one. Yes. Mel is a guy who's been victimized by this because he's getting 100 emails per week, people demanding a free volunteered consulting service. That's not what we volunteered to do. You're not going to get a free written volunteer consulting service by writing an email to the people who are trying to run a thing called a TechNet, which originally was intended to be a verbal sign-in live meeting of people. The real expertise of the TechNet is the group of people who gather here. It's not the group of people, two of us, 90% of it is one poor guy in Brooklyn named Mel, K2KEY, who's trying to act like an expert in all these areas at once for 100 emails per week. To make that kind of a request of a person is unjustified, dead wrong, and it's not going to be tolerated. That's my opinion. Mel's the guy who's been victimized by it. Let's hear what he's got to say. K2KEY, K2LIW on the tech desk.
This is K2KEY, no doubt. I've also received and had to send back, and I told them, I warned them many a time, do not send manuscripts. I am not going to review manuscripts, nor will I pass them on politely, get a note in them that I should pass it on if I am not capable, or I should first review it and then pass it on for a second opinion to you, Dick. So I would like to also emphasize that we cannot do any of these manuscripts, especially some of them are actually deceased or for a master's or a PhD program. I don't know where they've gotten this idea that we'll do the review on the manuscript. I mean, these are pages and pages I had one actually, a bound manuscript that was phenomenal, and I contacted the person. I said, I want it returned to you, but I think I should be compensated because I honestly tell you, I haven't got the wherewithal to sit down and review a thing like this, nor will I don't even think Dick would even consider it. This is another situation that has developed, and not only one time. I've had multiple times this has happened the last couple of years, Dick, over.
Wow. Yes, there is a left-handed compliment here. The fact that the guys in our listening audience listen to a guy named Mel, and they listen to a guy named Dick, and they think these guys are a little bit savvy about wireless, and therefore they send them their manuscript of their doctoral thesis for review, for editing, for vetting, as it's called. Are we also going to stand behind the guy during his defense before his mentors in order for him to get his doctoral degree? Of course this is ridiculous. There's a left-handed compliment that these people think we have the wherewithal and the competence and the smarts and the exposure and the intelligence to do that kind of review. It's a compliment that they asked. But they're asking for something way beyond the call of duty. That's not what we volunteer to do. We have volunteered to take verbal questions while the staff of quasi-experts are present. Because the staff of quasi-experts are present, the answer that you get to a small degree has had a little bit of peer review. The real good scientific journal, your Science Magazine, your Journal of American Medical Association, whatever, a person writes an article, he's doing research, he submits it to that journal, the review committee of multiple experts in that organization review the manuscript, find out what errors it contains or what ambiguity it contains, send it back to the author. The author makes those corrections, resubmits it, and if it's now considered acceptable, it gets published. And after it gets published, the vast reading audience out there of JAMA or Science Magazine then writes their comments that I agree or disagree. This person made an error in the way he conducted the experiment. It gets peer reviewed. And when you finally get the compendium of that answer, you've got something that's darn close to the truth. That's what peer review really is. Now, we do a poor man's equivalent, the ham radio equivalent of peer review, because we've got a group of people who are in the listening audience, they hear what we say, and they correct us when we make mistakes. And we only make mistakes 10 or 15% of the time. But we make mistakes. Mel and Dick try to be accurate. We have no intention to be inaccurate, but nobody bats a thousand. We make some pretty serious errors from time to time, and the listening audience out there pulls us up short, and you find out real fast. That's the main intent of the technique. It's the gathering of the clan, and we help each other. It's not intended to be a free, written, consulting service on all these crazy subjects, and it will not be. Back to you, Mel. K2LIW.
Hey, Dick.
Yeah, go ahead. Who is that?
Hey, it's you again.
Part of my peer review committee. Go ahead, Eric.
That goes my PhD dissertation.
I think you're missing one really important human factor here, and that is, if it ain't fun, you ain't gonna do it. You know, I mean, if you ain't having a good time, why are you here?
Okay, without a doubt, Mel and I are doing it because we get psychic income from it. Yeah, I get a chance to toot my horn. My consulting business gets a little bit of business because people hear me on the TechNet and have hired me. Occasionally that has happened. And yes, we do get some fun out of it that way. We do make some jokes about mistakes that we make in electronics. So when you're talking about fun, give me a couple more words, Eric. What kind of fun are you talking about? Us ripping each other? Us making mistakes and being corrected? Or trying to make jokes about the mistakes other people make? How do you mean fun, Eric? Go ahead.
Okay, the key thing that I haven't heard really in any of it is that here you got a bunch of guys who are getting together. Hey, you got a problem? Oh, let me hear about it. Maybe we can do something. What we're really talking about is not all the technical stuff. It's the human interaction. It's communication, this real-time, instant response thing that goes on. And in the process, we learn some things, we share some things, and maybe we inspire somewhere. You know, I mean, those are the kind of things that generally make you feel good, aren't they? I agree with that. On top of that, true ham radio operators got into ham radio because they've got sincere curiosity and a technical interest in how wireless and radio work. Wireless does this magic. It gives you action at a distance. You press down a key here, or you speak into a microphone here, and out of a set of earphones or a loudspeaker 5,000 miles away, something happens. That's the magic of radio. We're curious about that. We love studying it. That's what drives us. But curious people are curious about everything, whether it be blondes and brunettes or antennas or transmitters or space or how fiber works or how the oil burner in the house works. They're curious about everything. And to restrict us as to what subject, after we fulfill the original promise, which is to answer the verbally expressed call-in question. That's all we promised. Wherever it goes after that, to restrict it after that is censorship. And the ham radio operators, the real people with the enthusiasm, are curious about everything. I get a hell of a lot of positive feedback from people who say, gee, you guys were very powerful ham radio, but boy, that was interesting stuff. I get a lot of that. We get a little bit of flack from people who say, hey, you ain't talking about ham radio. You shouldn't be knowing it. Well, come on. Are you going to censor what's talked about on the 80-meter band on Sunday afternoon? Of course not. Now, should we continue to call it the technical event after the first hour? Well, it's a gathering that it's got a name, and therefore it's the gathering that got us there in the first place. And maybe we're not talking about pure ham radio subjects anymore. But we don't have to. We're not censoring our show. As long as it's not offending anyone, as long as it's not obscure, obscene, I think there is no subject that should be restricted. That's an opinion. But to send us a manuscript for review, wow. K2KEY. Mel, K2YW, tell us more about how you feel about all this.
Exactly. This is K2KEY. Harrison, as they said, hit the nail right on the head. I may have mentioned this to you also while we were talking on the phone, that we're fortunate enough to have a person like Eric available that is able to in-depth tell us about things like HDTV and plasma and all this new technology in the so-called entertainment field, but it is related to amateur radio because all the electronics that go into the plasma, HDTV, no doubt, exist in your new fancy kilobuck transceiver. And so understanding, understanding is so much a part of it that, you know, I you can't say enough appreciation for those people that join us. And you see what we just now had a situation with wire, talking about that wire, that number 12 wire, green wire, how we had somebody on a frequency is familiar with it and tell us what it's been doing, where and where it's available. Let me let it drop. Okay, now the only other, well, today on 10 meters, now we're going far and wide with this technet. And I got a comment on 10 meters today from a guy in South Carolina that was somewhat belligerent. And I didn't go off on him or anything. But he says, you guys actually are committing an illegal act on ham radio that you are referring to too much commercial. This is not amateur radio per se, that is more on the commercial market that you are alluding to. And it is illegal to bring up non-amateur radio products and all, and hawk them to some extent like you are. In other words, when we ask Eric about plasma TV, which one he thinks are better, or whatever, that this is not actually legal. I don't know now technically whether or not I should could, should have pursued it with this person, take over.
Have a statement there. Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Eric, and after that, W2 or number 2, Delta Charlie, whoever that was, and I'm going to first express an opinion. When a guy signs into the TechNet and he says, I'm thinking of buying a used piece of equipment, a Kenwood TS711A, which Dick K2RIW has been using for 5 years, and he loves it, and somebody wants to sell me one used for $300, is that a good buy? That's a perfectly valid question. That's a rig with 20 years of history. A number of us have used it. We know all of its glitches, its characteristics, its quirks, and we can tell a guy, I like this and I don't like that. To me, every time you get on ham radio and the first time you talk to a guy, he says, your signal is 599. What are you using as a transmitter? What's your antenna? And you give him a brand name and a model number. Perfectly valid. And I paid X number of dollars for it. Perfectly valid. So when it comes to older pieces of equipment, and the guy is thinking of buying one, and he wants to know, is he getting his money's worth? Perfectly valid question. But if a guy says, I'm just getting into ham radio, and Kenwood has just come out with this brand new model, ICOM has just come out with this brand new model, Yaesu has just come out with that brand new model, and there are these prices, tell me which one I should buy. Invalid question. Not a valid question, because we have no history on that. We're not going to do comparison shopping for people. When you take a used piece of equipment that we've got experience with, we'll tell you what we like and what we don't like. What do you think about all this, Eric? KE2EJ, KE2LIW.
KE2LIW, KE2EJ.
Now, Doug, you know, I think that Empower is about the basics, if we will view it at some time. I mean, what you described is the typical ham of 30 years ago. You know, we tend to immerse ourselves in one place and kind of don't see past what's really happening in our world, so to speak, because we create our own world. We choose the people that we know. We choose the things that exist in our world because we either put ourselves there or we don't. But it's a different breed of people that have come into ham radio in the later years, and the no-code years. There are those that are generally interested in what makes radio tick, okay? What we're really talking about is physics. I mean, it's a science. It's, you have a mathematically and a science-like mind. And with that type of inquisitiveness and desire to know, it's not restricted to one subject. As far as like the FCC is concerned, we can talk about anything we want. The only thing we can't do is say, hey, I got a business, and if you buy from me, I will give you the SNO. That's the only thing we can avoid. And we have to avoid. But just because I have to have this plasma TV and I like it, and I would like to recommend it to you, that's not a no-no. That's expressing an opinion. That's expressing my own observation of something that I've observed. Someone else might be interested in knowing it. This is all about the ability to communicate. And to communicate has no restriction within, you know, the 7 day words and the concept of doing something where there's money transaction as a commercial business. Let me know that. So, we in essence have no restrictions. And of those that came into ham radio that didn't have to work quite nearly as hard as people in the past, they begin to see what it takes to make the radio work. They get interested in antennas and, well, what does that do? Because it becomes more, grows on you. But it develops into that inquisitiveness of how things happen. So I think this whole business of human interaction is really what this is. It's a guy talking to another guy or a girl talking to another girl using a medium. And there shouldn't be any restriction as far as what's in one's head. KQRIW, K2J.
WCB2HWW.
Howard recognized, but we got W2 or something 2DC ahead of you. Mr. 2DC, give us your full call, your name, and your comment. KQRW, my name is Dick.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Marvin, KC2, Golf Ed Charlie. I'll make it simple. I listen to you guys both at a time without checking in. I think that you have an absolute great value to ham radio operators. The information is invaluable. Like I said, I listen all the time, and don't go away. Just ignore those who are critical of what you're doing, and continue procuring amateur radio as you do. And last thing is, hey, give a periodic disclaimer of the things that you don't do. But otherwise, you guys are doing a great job. Needless to say, KC2 Golf Air Charlie.
Fantastic, Marvin. And we're going to keep sending you the checks if you keep saying that. That was a joke. Okay. Howie, you're allowed to say whatever you want. You go ahead, Howie.
Let's say two things here. One, we're not doing anything against the rules or regulations. We still live in a country of peace and freedom. And, you know, I think the Tech Net does a great job. Every, for the last couple of months, I've been rebroadcasting the Tech Net via internet, via IRLP, and also on 10 readers. And I've been told that we're being heard right now down in North Carolina. The band is open. That's riding up to the Midwest. But we're being heard all over. The only thing I will make a comment, Dick, is that you should keep the questions a little bit shorter, the answers a little bit shorter, and a little bit more precise, and that's all. But if you want to cover other subjects, there's no problem to that. You're not violating any rules or regulations. And, you know, if someone don't like it, there's an on-off switch. The only comment I'm making is that, you know, if you answer a question, maybe you want to just, you know, not dwell on it so long, but that's where it does get a little boring. Maybe you want to talk about amplifiers. You know, you do a lot of questions on antennas, so maybe, you know, you want to spend some time on different subjects to make it different interest. But as far as, you know, Mel saying, is he wrong for getting into things? No. That's what it's all about. It's about discussing the free flow of ideas and expressing ourselves. And this is the meeting. K2RIW. The only question I have for Mel on 10 meters, was somebody saying they were hearing me detect that on 10? He said, I know the band has been open the last couple of weeks. Over to you, Dick.
Hey, CJ.
KC2MDP.
MDP recognized. EJ before that. Eric first. Go ahead, Eric.
Howie, you really ought to think about what you just said. You just contradicted yourself. If you want the free flow of ideas, how could you even think about restricting what somebody is saying and what they're feeling and the way they're saying it? So, but Howie...
Hold on, I didn't say that. All I'm saying is that sometimes... Understand. If that's what the tech net wants to do, that's fine. I didn't say that. All I said is you may want to... You know, sometimes you spend too much, you spend a lot of time, and people get bored. That's all I said. Dick has a right to express himself. Everybody has a right to express themselves. I didn't say that. All I just said was, is that when you give an answer, you may want to make it more concise. That's all. People have a right to complain and say, you know, can you do this? But no one has a right to stop the test net, Eric.
Okay, then why do you want to create rules? That's what I don't get. You know, when somebody is talking about something and they're explaining it, they have to imagine in their head how they're going to communicate so that the ideas that they have in their head are going to get across to the other person in their head. And the vast majority of people happen to be listening at one point in time. So, you know, it's not like you're talking to one person, but when you get on in this particular situation and you've got something to say, you know, usually what happens is as your thought processes work, it comes out. And this, what better atmosphere to do it than here?
Hey, I agree with you, but at the same time, look, you come from the broadcast world. When you put a program together, you decide what is going to be the most useful information to the majority of people. I'm sorry, but sometimes you look at the common denominator. All I'm saying is this. There are sometimes you spend 2 hours on an antenna. You know, sometimes it might get boring. That's all I'm saying. You know, don't jump down my throat, Eric. I mean, I listen to this. I like it. But there are times, you know, the flow would be a little bit faster, that's all. I'm just making a comment. It's my preference. You know, we all have likes and dislikes. I am not saying that I am going to turn off the system. I can't turn the system off. Or I'm going to shut my radio off because I don't like what shit you're saying. That's not what I'm saying, Eric. All I'm saying is sometimes I wish the flow of ideas would just be a little faster. We all have our likes and dislikes.
Yeah, I got a comment on this. Control, in other words. Diplomatically speaking, how are you saying that KQLAW is long with it? That's what he's saying, and he's right. There are times that I'm very verbose and long-winded. What Eric has to his advantage is that when a program is presented for his transmitting broadcasting station, a huge staff of people put in a ridiculous number of hours to compact it down to the essence of what gets presented. And a staff of people sitting around a table arguing, let's add this paragraph, let's subtract that paragraph. We won't lose the meeting. The majority of them will still get it, but now we've made it 5 minutes shorter. I took a staff of people to do that. I ain't got that inside my head. My guess is, Eric, for each hour that you put on the air, I'll bet you 250 hours of work, man hours, or maybe 2,000 hours of man work goes into that final presentation. Am I even in the ballpark, Eric? Go ahead.
Oh, you know, it's funny, because I was just thinking that. It was just in my head before you started saying it. Are you going to say, you know, how long does it take to do a half-hour TV show? And there are different kinds. I mean, there's a half-hour TV show that you can do in a half-hour in terms of it actually happening. But let's take Nova, for example. Okay, I can actually open up one of the pages here and find out that they're working on a Nova, and the Nova will actually hit the air in, where is it, October 2009. So it's now August 2008. And that's just a one-hour show. So you can take your guesses from how long it takes. I mean, when you go out and shoot a movie, all right, the cutting ratio, and what we mean by cutting ratio is how much stuff is on the floor. The cutting ratio of a traditional feature film tends to be somewhere between, like, 80 to maybe 100 to 1. So you can add that up, take an hour film, and add up the amount of footage that winds up on the floor to give you a good idea. But the point of the matter is, Vic, you're long-winded, but I tell you what, you know, when the subject is over, because nobody is coming back and keeping it alive, because that's the interactive part of it, it's not like Vic, your sister, and, you know, you want to be an orator for an hour on a particular subject. There's feedback going on, you know?
I don't want Dick to be upset. Dick, I don't think you're long-winded. A lot of times you got great subjects. I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. It's just my one-man's opinion, Dick. KQRAWWD2HW.
Detail-oriented is not long-winded. W2LIR.
Thank you, sir. Bob had recognized, but Steve was before that. He's been holding on for quite a while. KC2MPP, go ahead, Steve.
There we go. Microphone again. Dick, I'd like to personally thank you, Mel, and Eric. I'd like to also thank the other guys, Rich and Julio, Howie, Andy. You guys are doing a fabulous job. I look forward to the Tech Neck every week. It's one of the highlights of my week. Dick, you can be as long-winded as you want. The price is right. I don't see anyone forcing you guys to come back every week and do this. We should all be thankful that you guys are willing to do this for us. It is appreciated, at least in my eyes. And once again, I do thank you. I thank Bell. I thank Eric. I love the discussions on, you know, TV and stuff. I think it's great. Any topic you guys talk about, I walk away feeling I've learned something. So with that, I'll turn it back to you. And, by the way, next week, can we talk about blondes and brunettes? Two of my favorite subjects. Back to you.
If you let us include redheads. Hey.
Open up the big checkbook. We got to send one to Steve. Marvin, and let's see. We also got the man who runs the swap shop. We'll get him right after Marvin. Marvin, you wanted to make a comment? Go ahead.
Telling me something long-winded. I remember the first day I listened to you guys, I was on the Jackie Robinson Parkway in Brooklyn. I had a comment to make. I didn't get into it until I got home and logged in and got on with my my base station radio. And I probably said, wow, it took you guys a long time. And, you know, I think it was Mel. He said, well, that's what we do here. It's very detailed. It's, you know, and I learned then that it's not a matter of long-winded. It's very detailed, and it's appreciative. Once I appreciate what you guys are doing and realize it, that's what it is. And anybody's got any complaints about it, then they don't have to endure it. But the information is precise, it's very detailed. That's what I'm looking for. A lot of times you answer my questions without even asking, and I second what the previous ham radio operator said. He's doing a good job. KC2 Golf Control.
K2KEY, I got the bottom line on this thing.
Mel's going to get a check. Marvin's going to get a check, too. Let Bill say a couple of words. Bill, are you within communication range? Go ahead.
I'm on the east side of Manhattan, about to get on the Bloomberg Bridge. And I have a comment that, it doesn't really have anything to do with the tank gas. So can I tell you guys how to save 30 cents a gallon when you come into Jersey on gasoline?
Okay, you're getting a little bit weak, but make it quick. Go ahead.
You ride in the Holland Tunnel and you take the 380 exit and then follow trucks around 1 and 9 south. Right there on the curb, there's a gas station that's 30 cents cheaper than any of the stations there in Jersey City. So just to mention, we're just coming back from a ham fest in Winchester, in Perryville, very nice ham fest, and I just noticed the disparity in the price of gas coming into the city and going out of the city for the car. So just a little word to save you your pocketbook. And Dick, I enjoy your net, no matter what you guys talk about. If I find it boring, it's not awesome. I don't have to listen to most of the time I do. And I regret having missed it tonight, but I just got into range about an hour ago. So I enjoy this. Back over to you, Dick. Thank you. You can get over and I'll see you later.
Very fine, Bill. We got to send him a check, too. The main subject of discussion tonight is what the technique is and what it is not. I've got a big comment on that I'm going to make in a few seconds. Mel, go ahead with your next statement.
This is K2KEY. This comment of being new long with this is ridiculous, and I'll tell you why. Everybody wants today a quick fix to everything. Pop a pill in your mouth, push a button, whatever. They want quickies. Everything quickies. The kids today are quickies with their lives. They don't have a childhood. Everything has got to be quick, grown up and everything. We got to just sit back and listen for a change. This is the problem. Now, I've had it with my kids. I've seen it. I mean, how I won't go into the educational system, but I'll tell you one word. It starts with an S, and that's the only way I'll describe the educational system. Some years ago, just a quick example, I got my daughter one of these calculator watches, you know, that you got to have small fingers to use it, that's definitely, but Casio put it out, you had to have it, let me let it drop. He can put a problem up on a blackboard and ask for an answer, and my daughter's hand went up, of course, instantly she had the answer. And another problem went up, and of course the same thing. And finally, a teacher asked to come up to the blackboard to show how she got the answer. And she showed them the watch and said, there, just push the button. And again, just an illustration. The teacher says, no, you've got to learn how to do it on, you know, pencil and paper and all. And she says, well, why do they make these things? This is the type of lifestyle we've gotten into. So when you say you're long-winded, you're not long-winded. You are trying to explain better they want. This way they understand from the nitty-gritty of why this antenna speed line has to be so long. How do you put it up properly? How do you route the cable? How do you measure it all? I'm just not going to say to them, oh, just string the wire up so many feet, and don't worry about it. I mean, this is the kind of answers they want? It's ridiculous. In fact, I even quizzed my kids. Do you know that most of the children, young adults, I'll call them, at graduating high school cannot do a square root
by the long way on paper, Dick, over.
Yeah, I've often used that one exactly as an example, Bill. The high school I went to, Fort Jefferson High School, spent 2 weeks in the math class teaching us how to cast off by twos in order to, with long division procedure, form a square root. And it is a nice skill to know, but the number of times you and I need a square root is relatively rare. To spend 2 weeks of valuable teaching time teaching that nowadays, when a $5 calculator will get you that answer with one press of a key, and for the very few times you need it, you can do it by cut and try. You're not sure what the square root of 5 is, but you can take 2 and square it and you get 4. You take 3 and square it and you get 9. You know it's somewhere between 2 and 3, and you start making a couple of more guesses. You'll zero in on it real fast. You're doing a poor man's equivalent of Newton's method when you do that. That's good enough nowadays. I mean, the two weeks of class time maybe should be better spent teaching some other subject, because we've got to adapt. The world is continuously changing. We're becoming more global. So what's a valid thing to teach 40 years ago is not quite as valid to teach today. It's got to adapt. My biggest complaint is that the thing that didn't adapt is the fields and waves course that I taught in college. It did not change versus time in most schools. It did not adapt. It's not current. And you ask any electrical engineering student what subject they like the most, they can easily give you an answer. And it's various subjects. What subject did they like the least? 98% of them will say, I hated that damn fields and waves course. It was one great big mathematical memorization of three-dimensional vector math. It drove me up a wall, and it's in a form that I can't use. And why the hell do we have to all go through that misery? I have watched a number of extremely good engineering students go out of electrical engineering into industrial engineering because they couldn't hack that particular course. That's a waste. That's an opinion. Anybody got any further opinions? Give me your call letters, K2RAW.
Okay.
Can I second that, Dick? Fields and waves. What a... You know what? That's a torture court.
Start running Chinese.
Boy, a torture court, Dick.
It sure was a torture court. It separated the men from the boys. And if you could survive that, you could survive anything. Eric?
Yeah, I think the one thing that you're missing is that, especially in high school, how to find the square root? There's more than one way to do it, but the process of thinking, the logical process, the engrams that you implant in a young person's brain, when you take them through the process of how do I as you used the example that you gave before, the square root of 5, you know, it's somewhere between 4 and 9, right? Just that process of thinking. Okay, bringing a person into that analytical form, because the methodology of finding a square root, the methodology of doing long division, this may not be useful in the end, but the process that you go through to get there is what's important, and that's lacking in a lot of stuff that they do today.
Dick, I would like to make a comment.
Now, recognize part of what you're saying, Eric, is that we've got a very small number of gifted, enthusiastic teachers. Unfortunately, we've got a large number of teachers that are not quite that good. We don't pay them very well, so why should the really smart people be attracted to the industry in the first place? If they don't have some kind of a built-in dedication and willing to sacrifice their financial wherewithal, then why the heck would a smart person become a teacher? That's a sad state of affairs. Eric, I mean, Mel, you got to...
We pay too much for those they have. Honestly, yeah.
Maybe so. Go ahead, Mel.
Exactly. I agree with Eric 100%. It is a foundation brick, just learning how to do square roots by that long method. I know, of course, that yes, push the button, but you are taking the brick. And this is what is the end result. You take one away here and take one away here. The whole wall collapses. And basically, this is your education.
you talk to kids coming out of high school now, it is ugly. Ugly. I mean, they cannot be. No wonder this country is coming in, this fabulous country that I've sacrificed, that I've actually bled for. But to become a third world country where we supposedly see these countries that are, you know, and we see that they have a superior educational system. Now, I'm going to give you another, for instance, just quick, just now what has happened. Hold on 1 minute. Next door to me, my neighbor's very good friend, and they have a youngster there, 8 years old, in public school, and we're trying to teach him. I showed him a way to learn the multiplication table. The method they were teaching to learn the multiplication table, ridiculous. Sure, we can hit the buttons again on the calculator. 2 times 2, it's going to come up 4. But here, we have to teach the multiplication table to his youngster. And he didn't learn it. I stuck it to see, and it bothers him. My God, when I in Russia, where I came from the Soviet Union, he said, I learned this, he says, a year ago. He says, what's going on? Because the taxes and what we're paying here for education, and this is the result. You look at these kids, some of them are coming out of high school, Vic, they're illiterate. Which brick do you want to leave out in teaching any of these subjects? I mean, why do we have to make them all so shortened that this way, this is the foundation brick, doing square roots by the long method, as Eric said, over.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Jay Leno has got a beautiful comedy series that he shows periodically where he literally walks into the street in Los Angeles. He walks up to a person on the street. Half the time they are a person as a freshman in their college, freshman or a sophomore in college, and asks them, what does this word mean? Who's the Secretary of State? Who's the Vice President of the United States? And quite often he gets some rather silly-sounding answers. You can erroneously come to the conclusion that people are stupid. That's wrong. You're talking about a young person who hasn't been exposed to the world very much yet. We know a whole lot of basic things that we don't know we know because we've lived 40, 50, 60, 70 years. You acquire things. We're in what's called the fifth state of knowledge in many cases. The first state of knowledge, you're not aware about the fact you don't know something. The second state of knowledge, you find out you don't know it. The third state of knowledge, you go out and learn it. The fourth state of knowledge, now you know you know it. And the fifth state of knowledge, you make the mistake of assuming everyone else knows it. And they don't. The memos that people write in companies are quite often written in the fifth state of knowledge. The person writing the memo is using all kinds of acronyms and expressions that are unique to a particular program, and he's writing to a general audience, and he wonders why he gets no reply, because nobody knows what the hell he said. He hasn't put himself in the other guy's shoes. So you got to be careful in concluding that the modern youth are wrong, dumb, being poorly educated. Our standards are continuously changing, and you and my standards might be a little bit higher than is reasonable for kids today with the school status that we've got. We don't pay our teachers very well in many cases. We don't get the smartest possible people in the teaching profession. And that's a vicious cycle. Poor teachers give us poor students, which give us poor teachers. And how we get ahead of the cycle on that one, I don't know. Eric? If you were running the educational system in the United States, how would you correct that? K3J as a sub one, K2LAW.
Will you W with a comment here, please?
Mel, how are you recognized with Mel? Eric first, good Eric.
All right. That's a big one. That's a real big one.
I mean, could you imagine an educational system actually, when they start young, and we teach
what I guess you really could call creative thinking. Yeah,
well,
nobody has actually ever bothered to come up with a course like that. But the concept of thinking creatively, the concept of being able to observe your environment and not necessarily understand it, but see what's really there, to look out from your own set of eyes and to see what you could call the truth. The ability to teach people to have an expansive view of the world, so that they actually would know the name of their senator, that they would know the name of the vice president. Not that they have to be particularly interested in it, but they are, you're teaching sort of like awareness. And if you start doing that at a very young age, you know, some magic kind of happens as people grow, because their appetite for information increases. You know, I used to work at a university, and if I ever, you know, somebody asked me, well, I want to take an engineering course, I mean, I want to take this course, I would tell them, it was cool and nice. Those are the people that love to teach, and they happen to work in the industry at the same time during the day at their normal job. So, not the ones that have their life at school, but the ones that like blending both worlds. You get an amazing experience out of that. But, turn it up, and I'll get back to you. That kind of open-mindedness, and the problem with one of the bigger problems that we have in our current educational system is, as you bring out, is that there is not only a distinct lack of teachers that are interested in doing what they're doing, because you're going to find out that there actually is a rather large crowd of people that became teachers because they really felt that they wanted to give something back to the community. So for a lot of them, I mean, it does come from goodness, and then of course there are those who just couldn't get a job anywhere else. But you know, that road leads us down the road of politics and everything else, which of course everyone has their own opinions about. But the reality is that we, I think, are number 26 on the list of countries that do well with educating their kids. You got to remember, in Japan, if the kids don't do well in high school, they commit suicide. So, by the way, they do turn out some really good engineers, but some of them have a very interesting point of view, per se, which is something that's very different than what we had when we did turn out the big batch of engineers in the 60s and 70s.
The problem is that we're accepting here in the States, we're accepting mediocrity as excellence. And that is the basic problem, and to an end.
I got another comment to KE1.
KEW.
You're going to come after Howie. I like the idea of teaching at night. Howie and I went to a school, or at least when I went, a particular man who was heading the electrical engineering department was a guy who had worked for a couple of years in industry, hated it, and he went back to teaching. So I'm being acclimated for an industry by a man who could not acclimate himself. Whereas if I went to night school, although it's a longer procedure to get the degree than by that procedure, at least there's a higher probability that the guy who's teaching you works in the industry during the day, he's got hands-on experience of what the industry is really like, and now he's teaching it at night. I see a certain advantage there. Let me ask you a version of that, Eric. In the case of Sesame Street, in order to keep the children interested, they made sure that the subject changed every couple of minutes. The good news is it's very entertaining, very educational, simultaneously attracts their attention. And my kids were brought up to Sesame Street. The slight disadvantage of that, though, is that they come to expect continuous amusement, and they come to expect continuous change of subject every couple of minutes. Have there been discussions that you're aware of as to whether or not the procedure, the philosophy of Sesame Street is primarily accurate, but it has a slight disadvantage? Has anyone ever come to that conclusion, Eric? Then I'm going to turn it over to Mel. Eric first.
All right. I can actually tell you something about that, because I had at a
somewhat indirect involvement in how they came up with their formula, to say. We actually had, they're in Lincoln Center, actually, the secretary or assembly workshop. And they had a bunch of elementary school around them. And we actually had microwaves between the elementary school and the offices of assessment school. And remote control cameras, and they would actually test different ideas amongst the kids. And what they would do is this formula was derived from what actually worked and what kept their interest. Because at a specific age, at the age that they were looking for, you know, marketing to, want to use their term. And, you know, there's from like 3 to 5 year old was kind of their goal at that point. And they did a lot of testing with kids in terms of to see what their attention span was and to see how long they could concentrate on something. And they experimented for a long time trying to find the right number of minutes per segment. And there's a whole big thing as far as how it goes together. And there's been the psychological review boards and, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff publicized. And so you got to go through a Google search and doesn't see and keep yourself busy for a couple of weeks.
Okay, so by real experience with real students, they found out what works best on the students. Has anyone ever questioned, though, the long-range effect of the student coming to expect continuous change of subject? Because sometimes the real world doesn't do that. Sometimes the real world is kind of boring by comparison. How about you, Eric?
No, it's true. I mean, that's a very valid point. But actually, there's been a lot of study on the long-term effect. Considering the state of commercial television and what is, you know, passed on as educational and instructional, which most of it really actually isn't, you know, this is sort of like the best of all worlds, and the interesting part about Sesame Street is that it takes very little modification to export it to other cultures that have other customs and ways of being. And it's a very interesting way it gets put together and put it together in other languages and how it accommodates other customs and other cultures. But it does take advantage of the current psychological state of a child at that particular age, because that's just the result of what our society does. But it seems to be somewhat more universal around the world, rather than just to our specific locale, our customs, the way we live in a commercial society, where the other places tend to be a little more socialist or have other methods in terms of their government and the way people live in a given country. I mean, there's variations of that all across the world, but this formula was found to be so incredibly adaptable. And as far as like the long-term effects, there's been a lot of studies done, and they have both negative and positive things to say, as, you know, but it is what it is.
And one more comment I want to make here. 20 years ago when I visited that relative of mine, who at the time was living in central Mississippi, and I realized that Sesame Street was not allowed to be shown in the whole state of Mississippi because it had a mixed cast. And at that time, maybe 30 years ago, in the list of all the continental states in the United States, Mississippi was at the bottom of the list of those who had a good educational system for their youth. So here is a highly educational program. Here is a state that is in most need of educational improvement. Sesame Street arguably is a significant improvement in being a preschool and early school educational process, for the state that needed it the most got it the least. What a contrast that was. Mel, sorry to hold you up so long. Mel, go ahead and say whatever you like. I'm about to make a pronouncement after you make your pronouncement, after you say what you want to say. with reference to email. And I'm going to put something a little bit strong. You got it, sir. Mel.
United States 5 days to get water to the dome.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Well, my emails, many of them, this is the so-called kudos that I get when I take, as you said, a lot of the, well, they call it the complicated answers that you give, and I give a simplified formulas and all, and the questions are, where do you come up with these formulas and things? How do you simplify them? And you know, what book did you get it from? And this and that. However, I did one tutelage, and I showed how to solve an SWR problem by using a quadratic equation. Do you know I got at college that I was standing in for a professor in New York, I won't mention the college, as an assistant professor of electrical engineering. You know, I saw amongst the students there that a number of them did not know exactly what I was talking about in using a modified quadratic equation. And I was amazed. So, I am just dumbfounded when I hear things like, again, pulling another brick out of the foundation that Sesame Street would not be a universal program throughout this country that they were actually being blocked. I mean, this is just one more example, Dick, of the hypocrisy that is going on in the so-called Great Society over.
Well, I've got some relatives that live in the South, and sometimes I occasionally hear the other point of view. And when it comes to, I'm going to be overly specific here, when it comes to running a cotton farm in 1870, we'll say, where you needed a hell of a lot of hand labor to do weeding and picking and whatever, and slave labor fulfilled that requirement from their point of view beautifully, that industry, the textile industry of the South, almost would not have existed without slave labor. So to them, it was a strong necessity. That's the good news. Unfortunately, they built up some extremely prejudicial opinions about the people who were the slaves. They almost treated them at times there were certain people treated them very kindly, but still a hell of a lot of people thought that this is a farm animal. This is a tractor. This is a farm implement. And they wanted to continue that lifestyle. The North, from their point of view, the North was invading their lifestyle and changing their methods of staying viable economically. There's more than meets the eye, but the prejudice of any form, and that's what was really going on in Mississippi, a kind of prejudice that in the big picture is very hard to understand. All right, let's get back to the original subject.
TV2HWW6.
Let me get onto the subject for a second here, Howie, and that is a person who writes to Mel an email and wants a compacted answer, and Mel is very skilled at saying, what Dick really meant to say is, he said it in 5,000 words, and here it is in 31 words, and here's a simple equation that gets the point across. That kind of interpretation, without a doubt, there are people who consider it very valuable. And without a doubt, for a time I'm long-winded, I'm trying to put my feet into the shoes of a guy who maybe has never heard this subject before. And some of these electronic subjects, the first time you hear them, they're crazy. They're very opposite of common sense. And I'm trying to explain it from two or three different angles to make it a little bit easier. And without a doubt, I'm doing it in a long-winded manner. But here's the bottom line of it all. Once again, I'm going to say that what we in the TechNet have promised to do, what our unwritten charter is that if you verbally sign in with a question, the group of people who gather here will address your question essentially immediately when we finally get to it. And occasionally you're going to have the problem of, yeah, if you're the fourth person who signed in and the third question was on my favorite subject of Yagi's, and I ramble on for a half hour, You may have to wait, and maybe you're going to have to run your tape recorder, and you'll play it back the next day because you can't stay up that late. I know there's various ways to get around it, but that's going to be a disadvantage that happens occasionally. We may not get to you soon enough, but we will address your question that is signed in verbally to this group. Now let me drop. When it comes to the write-in question, which is not the assembled group, and it is not the major function of this TechNet, it is not part of our original charter, per se. It's something we almost didn't volunteer to do. I want you guys to write in a question to Mel to accept the concept that you are at high risk of not getting an answer. We are not guaranteeing that the write-in question will be answered. I'm going to try to force Mel, if he'll allow me, to be highly restrictive as to what he will accept as a valid question. When it comes to the verbal part of the question that are signed into this group, there are people who complain that I take some dumb questions. They complain to me about that. They fail to realize that a dumb question represents the biggest void between what the guy knows and what he wants to know. And the dumb question is the one that most deserves an answer when it is expressed to us verbally among this group. But when it comes to the questions written in, there are no guarantees. You are at high risk when you send a question in. There's a strong possibility you are wasting your time composing something in writing and sending it in. Because if it doesn't fit within very narrow restrictions, you're not going to get an answer. That's my take on this. Mel may have a slightly different take. He's the guy who has volunteered to take written questions. I almost think he shouldn't do it. He's wasting a ridiculous amount of time. He gets 100 emails per week. No human being should be subjected to that.